Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With Microsoft 365 from Vodafone, your business can bring the team together wherever they are. See vodafone.ie/business.
And I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair, Paul Jacobs. He's the founder and CEO of Smart Storage. Paul, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Bobby. Good to be here today.
Now, I want to bring you back to Waterford, where you grew up. Your father was a sheet metal worker. You got involved in an early stage in a side hustle that he had selling gates. Tell me more about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad was a sheet metal worker and worked in what was called a bucket factory. And secret was in the name. He made buckets and had a side hustle on of where he made gates at the weekend. My job then was... Dad would make the gates during the week, and my job at the weekend then was I'd get brought out and get left behind to paint them, have them all finished off as he'd go off to hang the next gate. And then I'd have to cycle on to gate number two to paint and finish that one off.
Great. That's a family hustle. But, you know, again, it probably marked the way for further things along your career. You went to the RTC in Waterford. You ended up, I think you started in computers, ended up with a construction management degree or diploma, whatever it was, and you basically became a civil engineer. Some of your earlier work was on projects like the M50, like the Mullingar Bypass.
Yeah.
Tell us about all that world.
Well, I went into construction in the RTC in Waterford, I suppose, I think it was 1987, way back. There was no construction industry in Ireland. Really, at the time, we were probably being educated to work abroad. But I was fortunate in that when we came out, it was just around the time when Albert Reynolds arrived home from the plane with the bag of money to build roads in Ireland. And my first job was on the Blanchardstown Bypass. As a site engineer, and I stuck with the road jobs then, did work with on the Mullingar Bypass and actually the construction of the M50, the original construction of the M50 from Blanchardstown out to the airport. And I know the M50 doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but I actually met my wife while working on the M50. So it has a...
It's a story of true romance, if ever there was one. And also, if you talk about the specific site, that's where the canal actually goes over the junction. So you were involved in the building and the construction of it.
I was involved with it at the earlier stage on Blanchardstown. And then we ended up having to dig out half of what we put in to then put in the whole canal structure then 3 years later when the M50 actually started on that section. It was called the Northern Cross to go from Blanchardstown out to the airport.
Your career on building roads as a civil engineer, it took a slight detour then when you got into the waste management business. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so working on motorways, it's a great life, but it's kind of a young man's game. You're travelling from town to town, you spend a couple of years in location, you move on, you come back. So I was married at this stage, and around 2000, I got the opportunity to join what was at the time Celtic Waste, but turned into Green Star. It was owned by the NTR Group. I was in at the early days involved in that. And that's when we started building a lot of landfill, started building a lot of material recycling facilities and that. And my job was, I managed a lot of that side of the business for them, building out the infrastructure. So I spent a couple of years working at that, but I always had the itch to do my own thing.
Going back to selling the gates.
Just, I always kind of wanted to give it a go and run it myself and do my own thing. I suppose in some ways I often wonder, I probably wasn't a great employee. I'm probably better running it myself because I was always looking for the edge, what you could do.
And you set up a construction business with a partner working out of Greystones.
Yeah.
Which bounced along nicely for a few years.
Well, yeah. We had, the timing was perfect. So it was the middle of the Celtic Tiger, 2004. We started a construction business with an old college friend of mine. And the two of us ran that from 2004 up as far as 2010. 2008 was the start of when everything started to turn. We kept it going. But 2010, it came to a natural end then at that stage.
Yeah. And did that allow you to see up front, I suppose, you went through some difficult periods towards the end of that business?
Well,
where you could see that the market was imploding before your very eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Getting paid, all those things, trying to pay people yourself,
you're trying to
balance the books.
You're trying to keep it going.
Yeah.
And then you want it to turn around. But then you also got to look at the practicalities of the market. We went from building 90,000 houses to 7,000 houses
yeah.
per year in Ireland. And so you were looking at then and going, this is going to take a long time to recover. And so, you know, I remember the choice at the time is that we could die painfully and slowly, or painless and quickly. Which one do we choose? And so we decided to close down the business and shut it up and wind it all up. And that in itself is hard doing because, you know, you spend so long building something up and then you decide you have to dismantle it, take it all yeah. apart, sell off equipment and plant and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But as you say, if there is any kind of a chance to have an orderly wind down, yeah. You probably weren't heavily invested in the property market yourselves then.
No.
So that meant that it's never easy, but it was easier.
It was easier, yeah,
yeah.
It was. We were only in the construction side of it. We probably had missed the boat and realized that we'd missed the boat on getting involved in property. And so we stayed out of it and stayed at what we were good at.
Smart storage then again, and I recall your presentation on Dragon's Den. So Smart Storage was a very interesting business, essentially creating storage, not in a bespoke way, underneath one staircase, and a business that you were very successful with. But tell us a little bit about how that came about and then how you managed to scale it.
Well, the first smart storage unit actually went into our own house. We live in a 3-bed semi house out in Greystones. Not a lot of storage space. Rooting around under the stairs one day, and I kind of thought there must be a better way of doing this. And so I sat down and sketched out and designed the first unit, which we put in our own house. And out of that, we got inquiries from friends and so on, and kind of thought there might be actually something in this. And this was at the point when we'd wound up the construction company. So I also was looking for, what do I do next? How do I feed the family for the next couple of years?
Didn't pay you for 3 years.
Didn't pay us for, yeah. Didn't pay us for a while.
So there obviously was a stage in that where you said, or maybe your wife said, how long more can we keep doing this?
Well, she had a classic line at one stage, which was, what do you call a job you don't get paid for? It's a hobby. So either turn this around and make it work or get yourself a job that pays the mortgage. And that was the ultimatum. And actually, in fairness, it probably focused me on particular things. And we changed the business model and it just started to pick off and fly at that stage.
How did you crack the UK market, which you've subsequently sold and well done on a successful exit there? But how did you scale that market in the UK? Because, you know, you often see businesses taking on the UK and coming back with their tail between their legs because it's a different market.
It is a different
and
market.
People think it's the same as here.
No.
And it's not.
No, it is a different market. You're right. We speak the same language, but we don't speak the same language. Mm-hmm. It's completely different how we interact and everything. And so we started off small. I started doing a lot of trade shows over in the UK. So we'd done like the Ideal Home shows these sort of interior shows. Now, in the UK, a lot of those shows are really big. Like the Ideal Home show in London was a 21-day event.
Wow.
And so it's a big commitment.
And was your model over there selling through distributors?
No.
Or how did you get the product onto the ground?
So we actually ended up building a network of fitters. So we had up to 40 fitters across the UK. We had 8 different hubs across the UK. We sold through our website. And we had a fitting network then on the ground. We had hubs in various different areas from Manchester to, we had 3 around London and so on. And we expanded out that way. It was very much focused on the business to consumer model. So we were selling to Mrs. Murphy in her home, who had a home storage solution.
And driven by the website. And
driven by the website.
Yeah, very interesting. And how many years did it take you then to build it up to before selling it? Was last year?
Yeah, we sold last year. So we really hit the ground in 2013 over there, and slow start building off in around the London area. And then at the back end of 2023, we got approached by Sharps Bedrooms. Now, Sharps Bedrooms in the UK are a huge company. They turn over about 150 million a year. They're nationwide. And they needed to diversify. They needed to move into something else. And they saw what we did as a perfect sort of model that they could grow out across the UK. So they approached us, and last year we closed a deal on it. And it's nice to...
Great.
It's nice to get...
And you were able to hold on to the Irish market and the Irish business. And indeed, you can develop the existing business anywhere outside the UK.
Yeah, so we held on to Irish business, and like, I'm only 56 years of age, so I don't want to retire yet. I'm not really interested in it, and I actually love working. So Smart Storage is a fantastic business. We've also got a great team working with us at the moment. So we've kept that business, and we're growing that out now across Ireland. We're actually opening a base up for Northern Ireland in the coming weeks and setting some stuff up there. And We're looking at the Holland and Belgium market then is next where we're looking for a similar model moving in there.
Right. And is there any other sort of suite of products in your head that may find its way into the smart storage model with the home office and all that kind of thing? Yeah, well, is there something that hasn't yet been invented?
Well, we've broadened out, like we've gone into the loft storage solutions, which are working really well. Understairs is our primary product. It's probably 90% of what we sell. But the loft storage solutions are growing all of the time. During COVID, we had a fantastic little product called a 60-second desk that we brought to the market. It was a real COVID moment of where it was a small home office desk that you could assemble in less than a minute with no screws, no fixings or anything. It just clicked together like Lego. So that was a great sort of little piece. So yeah, we're always kind of looking for different ideas.
And when you say loft storage, does that mean something modular that would fit into the average eaves of a house or...
Yeah, so our target would be the likes of the converted attic or loft spaces. And you've got all of that hidden space that's locked away that we kind of lose when we put in the plaster, the walls at the eaves. Well, we've designed drawer systems that slide into that and then slide out so that you're getting to use the loft space at the back without having to crawl in and crawl out.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm sure we'll be hearing plenty more of you. That's Paul Jacobs there, the founder and CEO of Smart Storage.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details. Because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.